Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Come on, let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
We're put together a defense that puts us in a position to win the SEC.
The players.
We're having fun and we're working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
All those things are going to be there, which are important.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Helm Paint and Decorating. The paint experts of Louisiana. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Max Home. And the East Baton Rouge Parish Library. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Jackson Blackman and host Jeff Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Three great players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, Jeff. And Jeff.
Yeah, I have a cousin named Jeff. He's like 3 days younger
than
me.
The voice lady got it wrong. We'll get it readjusted.
He has a radio show and they called him Todd.
Yeah. He has a podcast, and they call him Todd on the podcast.
All right. So, well, anyways, Jerry Palm is our next guest here as we begin hour number two. He's probably
Jeff Palm?
Let's call Jerry Todd Palm.
He's probably very confused at what we're talking about right now. But anyways, the voice lady got Todd's first name wrong. Got it mixed up. We'll get it fixed.
Yeah, it's only been 3 years.
Yeah, I know. Well, we just added Glenn. He's been hosting a show for 2 months. Co-hosting a show. We just added him.
Co-hosting. Well, he thinks he's host.
Guest host. For years.
Was he got Jeff's name right?
Is Jerry still on?
Jerry is still on. We didn't chase away another guest here tonight. Jerry Palm joins us from CBSSports.com. Jerry, thanks a lot for spending some time with us on the Max Home Hotline. How you doing tonight? Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I'm sorry. I only respond to Todd.
That's great. That's great. Well, since you only respond to Todd, Todd will ask you the first question, even though I'm a.k.a. Jeff. So we're going to talk about the college football playoffs.
Eventually, yes.
Jerry.
Okay.
And my first question is, when Tennessee plays Ohio State and runs them off the field in Columbus and goes – are they going to, like, erect some type of cross or something and crucify Ryan Day right where Michigan tried to plant the flag?
No. And the reason is because Tennessee is not Michigan.
Oh. Okay.
Ryan Day will get fired for losing to Michigan, and he's probably not going to get fired for losing to Tennessee.
But that won't exasperate the situation at all?
Oh, it probably does. But it's baffling to me that the standards are so different at a place like Ohio State.
I mean, he could win the national championship, like just, Jerry, and have that loss to Michigan.
Yeah, no, it's really the loss to Michigan that has their fan base frothing at the mouth. It's not this year's loss to Michigan. It's that it's four in a row,
right?
So it's the fact that they can't beat Michigan is a problem. That if they lose to Tennessee, that's one in a row. So far as they know, so. That's not going to be the kind of thing that gets Ryan Day fired. It's losing to Michigan next year. Maybe gets Ryan Day fired.
Yeah, that was a killer because he obviously had a better team and was having a much greater season. And then he loses that game. But Jerry, I wanted to ask you, you've been the NCAA tournament bracket expert for years and years. What do you see similar to this first college football playoff bracket? What about it reminds you of the NCAA tournament in some ways?
The process for picking it, which is that it's subjective, guided by objective data, but still a subjective process. And every member of the committee views the data and values different portions of the data differently. So I thought this year was kind of inconsistent. One thing that's really different, of course, is that they're doing their bracket, if you will, every week, or their rankings every week anyway, whereas the committee does it twice. They give you a top 16 in mid-February and then the final one, and that's it. Of course, they're dealing with a much bigger bracket in basketball. It would be impractical to try and do that every week. And they spend 5 days doing the final one. So it becomes a full-time job if you do it more than once. But the similarities, though, are the fact that you've got all this data to work with, but everybody on the committee has their own view as to which data points are more important to them and which are less. And there's just there's a subjective nature of how the games are viewed, you know, as they're played. You've got some coaches on this committee that are breaking down film during the week. You don't have that going on in basketball.
One thing I like is how they paired Notre Dame and Indiana. That's like something you see in the NCAA basketball tournament, like when Alabama played South Alabama in the tournament, or, you know, they get those games you don't see that you want to see sometimes. I remember when Bobby Knight and Dale Brown were feuding, they paired them up. But
that was not a first-round game, though, was it?
No, it wasn't, but they can, you know, they were looking ahead. Yeah.
No, they don't look ahead. That's the thing. All of that is, everything you just said is myth. None of that is true. They didn't bracket Notre Dame and Indiana together. The rankings bracketed them together. And you could see that coming for weeks. As long as they continued to win, they were probably going to end up playing, each other.
So there was no human.
They didn't do it on purpose.
There's no human element that added. Okay. Okay. Wow.
No, they don't care about that. Why would they care about that? Why do they care about Indiana at all? Indiana football? I mean, they do because they have to. But, you know, most of the people in that room, maybe even all of the people in that room, did not know in advance that Indiana and Notre Dame have not played each other but once since 1958. You know, Purdue plays them pretty regularly.
So that was just dumb luck. That was serendipity.
Yes.
Wow. Exactly. That's amazing.
And it's like that in the basketball tournament, too. They haven't gotten, most of the people don't know what other people with local knowledge know.
Sometimes they know. Sometimes they know.
But it doesn't matter. They're not going to do it on purpose. They don't need to do it.
Well, that being said, Jerry, you live in Indiana. What is the hype surrounding this game right now?
It's big. It's bigger with Indiana. Notre Dame doesn't view Indiana as a peer. So it's a bigger deal for Indiana just to be involved in something like this. Totally unexpected. They didn't even sell out a home game until their fourth one. I mean, that's, you know, and their students were still leaving at halftime. It took a long time for the fan base to buy into this team actually being successful because it almost never happened.
Well, then Alabama should be in instead of them if they didn't sell out four games. There's some Alabama fans still think they're going to get in this thing. I'm telling you.
Their stadium is a little less than half the size of Alabama.
Well, they shouldn't be in there.
They're fired up about it. They only got 3,500 tickets, that's the CFP standard. You know, is that the road team's supposed to get 3,500 tickets. So Indiana only got 3,500 tickets.
Wow.
In Notre Dame's 90,000-seat stadium. I'm sure they're hitting the aftermarket hard, and there'll be more than 3,500 Indiana fans there. Personally, I'm rooting for Lake Effect Snow.
Yes, I am too. I want snow in one of these games. But well, I don't think we're going to get it. Or maybe, I guess.
I don't know if you're familiar with Indiana weather patterns, but Lake Michigan, when you get that west wind off of Lake Michigan, northern Indiana can get hit pretty hard.
Oh, yeah.
I happen to live in northern Indiana, but not in the snow belt. And it's, you know, if they get a good wind going that day and the weather conditions are right, they could get 2 feet of snow during the game.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm rooting for.
My godparents lived in LaPorte, Jerry.
Well, there you go.
Very, very familiar.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. No, it's like Buffalo West.
Right in the snow belt.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry, what do you think? What do you like about the bracket, and what is wrong about the bracket? What team should not be there? What team should be there? Or just what are your opinions on that?
Well, I mean, in terms of who made it and who didn't, I don't have a problem with who made it. I have a little bit of a problem with the sort of inconsistency of the message over the last 2 weeks. You know, you go into prior to the championship game and Alabama's ahead of Miami. And you could have gone the other way with that, and that because they were very different resumes. And but they went with Alabama ahead of Miami, and they detailed the reasons why, and they were good reasons why. You know, strength of schedule, the quality wins, and stuff like that. But then I'm looking ahead, and I see, well, you know, if SMU loses to Clemson, you know, their resume is going to look a whole lot more like Miami than it does Alabama. And they already told us what they think of Alabama and Miami. So then SMU does go out and lose, and they end up ahead of Alabama. And all of the reasons why Alabama was ahead of Miami still applied to SMU, but they kept SMU ahead of them anyway. And just like you could have justified it with Miami, you could have justified it with SMU, and they did. And SMU is better than Miami in the sense of one more win because of the extra game. They didn't lose to an unranked team like Miami did. That's basically it. But I think the fact that their game basically went to a last second field goal, I think is why they were not as punitive to SMU as they might have been with Miami. But that's the subjective part of the process. They've got this data, and the data says Alabama, but the subjective part of it made them believe in SMU.
Jerry, with the first round games, who sets up with the easiest path? Who's got the most difficult road?
Mm-hmm. Well, Oregon's got the most difficult.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy.
Or actually, the Ohio State-Tennessee winner does, because they had to play one more game just to get to Oregon. You know, but that part of the bracket is brutal. Oregon already beat Ohio State this year at home, a tight game, 2 points, 3 points, something like that, pretty close game. You have to do that again. But I like Dan Lanning's attitude about that. We're going to practice, we're going to get ready, and we'll play whoever shows up to play us.
And just wear Michigan's colors if they play Ohio State.
Oregon's got a lot of alternate uniforms.
Yeah, sure, go for it.
One of them. So that's obviously the most difficult path. I think if you're going through, you're going through Arizona State or maybe Boise State in the second round. The Texas is the 5 and Penn State's the 6. Those teams probably have an easier road than, say, Ohio State, which makes sense. They're lower seeded, or Oregon, who has to play the winner of that game.
Jerry, I got two questions for you. Since we're on this topic, do you think next year conference champions will not get an automatic bye? Or the top 4 highest-ranked champions will not get an automatic bye?
Maybe. It depends on how desperate they are to change it, because it's going to turn on its head the next year anyway.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So there's no real harm in doing this one more time.
Yeah.
If they decide to just go to a straight 1-12 seed and play it, obviously nobody's going to have a problem with that. That's what we're all used
right.
to. And it makes sense that way. The conference commissioners wanted to put an emphasis on winning your league. I had a thought about that. So I think what you could do is you could make the top 4 teams, the top seeds in the rankings. And then if you have, the 3rd and or 4th, whatever, conference champion, not part of that group, give them home games no matter where they're ranked.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they earn a home game, but not necessarily a bye. You don't have to turn the bracket entirely on its head to do that.
And then looking ahead at this weekend's matchups, if you had to pick an upset, where would you pick it?
An upset.
And that would include Tennessee, because they're like a 7-point underdog.
Yeah, they had the best chance to do it, I would say, just because I think that's a pretty even match. I'm taking Tennessee in 7. That line's too big.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. I get called worse than that all the time.
Jerry, thanks a lot. Hopefully we're talking some LSU basketball with you with the other 15 teams from the SEC that are going to get in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they're just going to give the SEC 1 region. It's going to be the SEC tournament.
That'd be pretty cool. All right. Thanks a lot, Jerry. We appreciate your time, man.
All right. Thanks.
Jerry Palm here on Tiger Rag Radio. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Tiger Rag Radio. This is Jeff Lermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network. And joining us now on the Max Home Hotline, it's Mark McCloud, who is the host of Blitz Sports Radio, heard in Florida, and also host of the Gator Blitz podcast. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us. Hope your holidays are off to a great start. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you and everybody in Louisiana. Yeah, it's been a long ride for the Gators, Jeff.
we're finally getting some good things to talk about here in Gainesville, and hopefully that'll continue. But always good to be on with you.
Well, it's great to have you on. Let's talk. We wanted to ask you about the two players that LSU's been able to get out of the transfer portal that are former Florida Gators. We'll start off with Jakeem Jackson, the cornerback from Kissimmee, Florida. He is someone that Corey Raymond, when he was on Billy Napier's staff, recruited to Florida. Now he's following Raymond to LSU. Didn't see much of Jackson this season. He got hurt early on, but what's the potential at 6'1", 190 pounds?
Yeah, that guy's a player. He really is. Comes out of a good high school, Osceola High School down in Kissimmee. They participated in a lot of state quarterfinals and even state championship games. Just a really good player. He came out of the out of camp, really, and he was fighting Florida. A couple guys, you know, you had Marshall in at one corner, and he was probably going to be the starter. He had really impressed everybody going back to last spring. But he was in a battle with Devin Moore, who's an awfully talented young man out of Naples. And Moore ended up winning the job, but there was no doubt Jackson was going to get a lot of playing time as a young guy. Moore's a junior. He's been around a little while. So, but awfully talented young guy, obviously played in those first two games for Florida before suffering that ankle injury and just really couldn't seem to get back. By then, you'd had a couple other guys, Dijon Johnson, Cormani McClain played a little bit for Florida, who had stepped up in the absence of Marshall and Moore. So we did see a little bit of Jackson, but I think coming back from that ankle injury, it was awfully difficult because that was a bad one.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he can do at LSU. Wanted to also ask you about Jack Pyburn, who is an edge rusher that had a breakout season this year. Second on the team in tackles with 60, had a sack, had an interception, four tackles for the loss. Had a nice game against LSU when the Tigers played in Gainesville. First of all, was it a surprise to see Jack go in the transfer portal? And maybe what's the reason after it seemed like he broke through this year?
Yeah, it was. It was. And you talk about another kid coming from a fabulous program, maybe one of the most storied programs in Florida, the Bowl School over in Jacksonville. They've won a ton of state championships. And Jack is one of my favorite players. He really is. Jeff, I'm not just saying that because we're on the air in Louisiana. This is one you hated to lose if you're a Florida guy. I mean, he kind of came on late in recruiting for Florida, really got on the map because he was more of a three-star guy coming out. But there were a lot of people who in Jacksonville who said, I've seen this kid play and he's the real deal. And he is. He was kind of the fiery guy for Florida, helped fire everything up on that defense. You know, he started to come on as a young guy last year and then suffered a torn ACL, which really set him back a bit. You know, got a little slow maybe getting going this year, but when he got going, boy, was he something else. And he was the guy, Jeff, that I think LSU people would be impressed with. They were dropping him back into coverage from time to time. They really were. They were using him in all areas as a defensive end, not only as an edge guy, but certainly as a guy who could really set the edge and play hard against the run. And he was by far Florida's best defensive end against the run. He is fabulous against the run. But they were able to drop him back a little bit in coverage and do some things with him too. So there's a guy who's got a little bit of flexibility, but boy, you hate to lose him. And it was a shock for everybody in Gainesville when he put himself in the portal. I mean, you know, here's a guy, he's a Gator for life or you thought, and it just, for whatever reason, couldn't agree with some things with Billy Napier and the staff, with his playing time going forward, maybe some money that they couldn't agree on, and ends up he's at LSU. And boy, you guys got a great
one. Well, it'll be interesting. Him and Whit Weeks, it could be a nice combination as far as at linebacker, or if he ends up being an edge rusher, we'll see. Wanted to ask you about Florida. Obviously, a good finish for Billy Napier in 2024. How did he hold it all together?
I don't know. He has talked to us ever since he got at Florida about building a culture. And now, you know, you go back to last year and he started talking about in 23, you know, we're getting there. We've made a lot of ground and we really feel a great relationship with these kids. We're right where we need to be or getting where we need to be. And now this year they finally got there, but boy, it took a couple of hard hits. You know, they lost, blown out by Miami, blown out by Texas A&M. They did score late, but the score really wasn't indicative of what happened. Texas A&M blew them out. But then, Jeff, you saw them come together. And those games, Florida was soft. They just there was no physicality. They weren't tough, and that's where Pyburn came in, because what Florida did was they said, "Look, we're going to take a Wednesday practice session during this bye week. We're going to go hard. We are going to get after it in this Wednesday practice session, toughen us up a little bit, and hopefully then we'll be ready for the game on Saturday." And it proved to help. It really did. And then you look at Pyburn, his tenacity, his aggressiveness. He is a fiery leader, and I think one that you guys are going to love on that defense at LSU, because he is an inspirational dude, and he was a big help for Florida, a big motivator for Florida getting down the road.
Mark, it should be interesting. LSU and Florida meet in September next year, which will be very interesting. Hopefully it's not a day game in Tiger Stadium, because it'll be brutally hot, but it should be a fun SEC opener next year. Thanks a lot for your time tonight and giving us a little bit of a scouting report on Jakeem Jackson and Jack Pyburn.
Always good to be on with you. And from our perspective, we hope it's a noon kickoff in Tiger Stadium. Oh, noon kickoff.
There'll be like 15,000 fans there. It'll be brutal. All right, man.
We'll love it.
We'll see you. Thanks, man. Merry Christmas again. Appreciate it, Mark.
Merry Christmas to everybody, you and everybody out there. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
You should call that radio station and let him have it.
Good idea. 1-800-673-5555.
I want to be under the bright lights. I want to be on the Broadway stage.
Tiger Rag Radio is on now.
We're back here on Tiger Rag Radio. Jeff Palermo, News and Sports Director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo. And joining us now on the Max Home Hotline, it's David Murray, who covers Mississippi State Bulldog football for 247 Sports. David, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. How you doing?
Jeff, Glenn, good to hear from you during this bizarre season where I'm sure you're like me. You're writing bios of potential transfer signees that will never set foot on campus.
and if they do, they won't be there for long, probably.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, Mississippi State just lost its leading receiver, Kevin Coleman, but State was his third school in 3 years, and now he's going to a fourth school, headed back to Missouri in 4 years. So, you know, and y'all will appreciate this being with LSU as well. About when NIL started breaking out about 2 years ago and the free transfer, I told a couple football coaches, you know, don't talk to the NFL. Go talk to college baseball coaches. First, they're going to laugh at you because they've been dealing with this for 40 years, so they're not going to show much sympathy. But they will have a better idea how you deal with not knowing what your roster is right at the time practice starts. So
that is amazing.
They can talk you through this a lot better.
They've been doing the portal for 40 years. That is amazing. Well, David, Mississippi State just lost its quarterback, Michael Van Buren, who could have been the starter next year. He replaced injured starter Blake Shapen, but he did really well. Played 7 or 8 games, threw for 1,886 yards, 11 touchdowns, threw for 300 yards against Georgia and Arkansas. Did that surprise you at all, or what was your reaction to Van Buren jumping over to LSU?
We had a couple of weeks preparation at the end of the season that this was a possibility, because the word was that his NIL demands were going to go up exponentially. Rightly so. I mean, strike while the iron is hot, as they say. A lot depended on what Blake Shapen decided to do, and he indeed will get his medical hardship and come back for another year with Jeff Lebby here at State. And of course, remember, he was the starter when the season began. Van Buren was supposed to get some snaps, mostly redshirt. I thought he acquitted himself admirably in the games he played. And I'll just get straight ahead on what Tiger fans expect from him. The kid has one thing that can't be taught. He has a beautiful touch on the deep ball. He can, on time, on target. His problem simply is he's short. They list him at 6'1". He probably is 5'11", maybe less at this point. I want you to watch his film and see how many balls get knocked down at the line of scrimmage. And that affected his timing on the slant routes and other things, where he just tried to hump up and get the ball out before it could be knocked down. That's not a criticism. That's just reality. Now, if LSU can fix that, they've got a guy who can make all the throws. He's got the arm. He's got the aggression. And he's got the recognition. So I think it's a fine pickup for them. It simply was a state where Mississippi State could not afford investing so much NIL when they've really got to get out there and find a bunch of linebackers, defensive linemen, offensive linemen. Plus, you have Blake Shapen coming back, and now you're bringing in Kamario Taylor, who's the future of the position. So at this point, State just said, we wish you well. You're not on our schedule next year. We're going to go find another quarterback in the portal for number three this spring, and life goes on.
What about Michael Van Buren's ability to make plays with his legs? How's that, David?
It got better in the middle of his starting. He began poorly with that. And he didn't end the season well. His decision-making, when to run, when not to run, it got to the point that I even asked a staffer, said, does he have the freedom to change plays? Because it looks like he's just sticking with something that's been told to do. Said, no, he was given the same freedom as a veteran quarterback. So his decision-making in the run game is an area that's got to be worked on there. And part of it, too, is when you have the ability to put the ball down there long, you're going to wait longer, rightly so. You see the potential for the big hit down there. You wait until the last second you have to run, then you take off. So I think that's something that can be refined at the college level, certainly. He's not particularly big, as I said, but he has a knack. He does need to be taught when to slide, when not to slide, but who doesn't at that age? I've often thought that there's got to be a better way of designating where the sticks are for maybe put another one, say, okay, here's the slide zone. If you start here, it ain't a first down, that kind of thing. But I think LSU's picked up a good young prospect, and he was ready to move on. And remember, he's a Baltimore kid, so this was not anybody who had any loyalty to one position here in the SEC, and so now he's going to take his chance at another position.
David Murray here on Tiger Rag Radio, covers Mississippi State. David, how has Mississippi State's collective developed since this all started in 2021? Where are they now, you think?
Well, my good friend Charlie Winfield runs the collective, and I have never pushed him for dollar figures. We're too good of friends to do that. I'm not going to put that kind of pressure on him. I know Mississippi State is better off this year as far as the portal goes, but they still simply cannot go out there and buy every player they want. That's just not going to happen. And I will remind this, even for the programs who do have plenty of NIL money in their collectives this year, where's it coming from next year or the year beyond that? I think that market is going to settle out in the next several years once fans get tired of wasting their money. But State's in better position this year. It simply comes down to making the decisions where to invest. And if I had to pick one priority, I would simply say defensive line. This is a program that you look at the guys in the NFL right now who epitomize State defensive line play. Well, they were all Mississippi kids. For one thing, State of Mississippi has not turned out similar players to the Chris Jones and the Fletcher Cox lately. But secondly, State's not getting them. I did a piece on State's defensive line signings since 2017 under now four different coaches, and it's frightening. That's why State's really struggled. It's not the offense. Jeff Levy can call a really good play. This guy is an offensive mind for certain. State has got a total rebuild to do on defense, and I'm talking front to back and everywhere in between. That's where, to my mind, the Bulldogs have to spend their money. But you look at the commitment so far, Libby, again, is going after more wide receivers because I said we just lost Coleman. Mario Craver, an exciting freshman, was kind of pushed out the door for issues not related to his play. And Creed Whittemore decided to go to Utah. So he and Chad Bumpus are bringing in receivers. I still say go get all the muscle you can because that's where State was losing games this past year.
You know, I wonder if LSU didn't play Mississippi State this past season, but I wonder when in the portal you're going to see teams that are playing a team coming up and they get a guy out of the portal from that team so they don't have to play against them. I mean, just LSU would have tried to get John Bond, right? A good running quarterback so they wouldn't have had to play him.
One of my favorite stories of all time is when he won in 83 and I ran to Jack Crystal's radio booth with a hand-scrawled note, John Bond, first quarterback ever to beat LSU four times. And Jack, in that marvelous voice of his, looked at it and said, David, I can't read a word you wrote. So you bring those memories up. But yeah, we joke about it now, but that's the truth. How much scouting are coaches doing during games of the opponent? I can foresee entire portions of football staffs being invested in doing only that, watching the other team as they substitute, not what they see off film, what they see in person, what they see on the sidelines, watching them warm up and thinking, let's go after this guy because maybe we can prompt him to the portal.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's happened in baseball. When LSU was playing Southern Miss in the regional a couple of years ago, they signed one of their pitchers the next year. You know, the guy beats him, then he's on their team. LSU just signed a tight end from Oklahoma that they just played against a couple of weeks ago, Bauer Sharp. You know, in the portal. So it's a wild year. David, appreciate your time and good luck with keeping track of all this.
Guys, I look forward to seeing. By the way, I know this will sting a few LSU fans, but I've got to say, Mississippi State just beat McNeese by 3 points in Tupelo. Will Wade can still coach basketball. He had that team, not very big, but they're athletic, they're fast, they can move. That's a lot better team than the record shows. So just a reminder out there that the guy's still a good basketball coach, and sorry that it ended the way it did for him down there, but you keep track of these things in the sport because, you know what, as Bruce Pearl has proved, you never know when they may come back around.
He's still popular here with a lot of LSU fans.
I don't doubt it.
David, thanks a lot for your time, man. We really appreciate it. Good luck. Happy holidays.
Guys, same to you, and hope to see you during basketball and baseball seasons.
Thank you, David.
That's David Murray, who covers Mississippi State for 247 Sports. Let's take a break. More of Tiger Rag Radio right after this.
We want to know what you think.
Call up the studio.
Call the show at 800-673-5555. Back to the show.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, good conversation there from David Murray from 247 Sports talking about LSU's new quarterback as the Tigers signing from Mississippi State, Michael Van Buren Jr. from Bowie, Maryland, right? Bowie, Maryland?
Right.
Yep. So big signing there for LSU. I know, Todd, you've been waiting all night to talk LSU women's basketball. So LSU did beat Seton Hall on Tuesday night, 91-64. So a solid victory for LSU. They're 13-0. They'll play UIC on Thursday, then take Christmas off. One other bad non-conference game, and then they jump into SEC play.
That's right. And so they're likely to go into SEC play unbeaten.
Right.
And
have they been? I know they've played. You know, they were tested against Washington. They had to come from behind and win that game in the Bahamas. Certainly tested by Stanford, which I don't think is ranked. I think Washington's the only ranked team they've played, if I'm correct.
You would be correct. But, you know, Bob Starkey and I believe Kim Mulkey, too, both believe Stanford is going to finish a year better than Washington did.
But they truly have not been. This has been, and we've seen it so far through three seasons that Kim has been here. Her non-conference schedule has been just about. It hasn't been strong, Todd. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to be kind when I say that. It's just filled with a bunch of teams, and there's a couple little challenges here and there, but it's not very, not very difficult.
You know, interestingly enough, they played their what could arguably be considered their worst game on Sunday
against UL Lafayette.
Right. The flaws really showed.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of the reason for the schedule being as soft as it is every year with Kim, because she's developing that roster and trying to play a little chess game with.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain with the results, right, so far. I mean, there's no doubt. And every year, I think she's had, you know, even coming off the national championship season, I think she was, even though you still return Angel Reese and Flaw J. Johnson and, you know, those two main players, and because you were adding Anisha Morrow, that the team was so much different. And she did challenge them in that first game off the national championship game. They went out to Vegas, played Colorado, and lost. And then I think she was kicking herself the rest of the – for a long time after that they played such a difficult game right off the bat with a completely new team. But anyways, so they're 13-0. I don't know how good they are. I mean, they're ranked fifth in the country. I know they're a top-10 team. I don't know if they're – And I don't know how – I mean, the SEC was down last year. I mean, you had South Carolina, LSU. Tennessee was okay. Ole Miss was okay. I don't know how much – I saw Kentucky's ranked in the top 20. So they've jumped back up there. But I don't know how good this league is.
Well, I think the thing that LSU has going for it this year is they have typically strong Kim Mulkey defense.
Mm-hmm.
Emphasis is on defense, but they have, and we've talked about it the last couple of shows here, last couple of weeks, they have firepower.
Yes.
Across the board.
Yes.
And they can, as Kim says, score the ball.
Right.
She doesn't say virtually at will, but that's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they, of course, have the defense that and rebounding with Anissa Morrow, especially.
Yep.
That they can stay in a game when they're not hitting the outside shots or the perimeter shots that they need to hit to score at will.
And Mikayla Williams could shoot you back into a game, or Mikayla Williams could take a close game and get hot and separate the score.
Right. She kept them in the game, especially in the second half against Stanford.
Oh, they don't win that game without her.
They don't win that game without her.
Slagge did not have a particularly strong game that game.
No, and she did it tonight against Seton Hall. They pulled away basically in the second half where she had 15 points in the
second quarter.
In the second quarter alone, and she hit six three-pointers for the game, 6 of 11 shooting. So she has that ability, and again, it just exemplifies what we're talking about, because Anissa Morrow tonight had 24 points and 19 rebounds or something like that, just phenomenal. And Jersey Wolfenbanger, the transfer from Arkansas, who set out last year, is really coming into her own. That's a big piece.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close here. Football is winding down. Eventually, this transfer portal news is going to quiet down. You'll play the game on New Year's Eve, and then it'll be basketball season.
There's a game on New Year's Eve?
There is a game on New Year's Eve, yes.
Is LSU going to wear some kind of weird uniform?
Well, it's purple and white. It's purple tops, white pants.
Oh, they've announced it.
Yes, it is on social media.
Is it the traditional purple jerseys? Yeah.
The flashier ones. They've worn that combo before.
So that'll be 14 games, and they only wore traditional uniforms in 6 of them.
Hey, it's the players. Brian Kelly's putting it on the players. They're the ones. It's the leadership council.
Didn't most of those leadership council members transfer?
I don't know. Maybe those uniforms should go with them, right?
Exactly.
All right, we'll be back after this to wrap up the show.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was a life for me. Home with LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, some late-breaking transfer portal news, so we'll get right to it here. First of all, Oklahoma transfer wide receiver Nick Anderson, according to multiple media outlets, is committed to LSU. This is a kid that's 6'4", 220 pounds, did not play this past season, but had a big year in 2023 with 38 catches for 798 yards. Your reaction, Todd?
He's a big piece, number 4 wide receiver in the transfer portal. Extremely talented. They wanted him bad. Looks like they got him.
And then it's not stopping there. Defensive lineman Sadir Mitchell, who's a transfer from Texas. Obviously, the Longhorns are playing in the postseason, but the 6'6", 340-pounder is looking for somewhere else to play after appearing in 8 games for the Longhorns. So this is someone, obviously, Bo Davis recruited, and now he'll be on he'll be visiting LSU on Wednesday and Thursday.
6'6", 350-pound defensive tackle, originally recruited by Bo Davis, like he said, could be an interesting piece.
You're impressed with what LSU's doing. I mean, there's been a lot of times, Todd, we've laughed about it a few times, right, where Brian Kelly says one thing and then the opposite happens, you know, or it doesn't. And that happens with a lot of coaches. We're not just picking on Brian Kelly, but – He said, hey, we're going to be very aggressive. He was very matter of fact. We're going to be aggressive in the transfer portal. And so far his actions are certainly speaking or matching what his word said.
He changed his tune late in the season because it was like after the Texas A&M loss, he was still talking about building from the recruiting base. He really went hard at it. And like you said, he stuck to it after Bryce Underwood went away.
Safety is still, to me, a kind of a glaring spot, don't you think?
Yeah, they got to get at least one safety. Yeah. I think they need two.
But getting two wide receivers who can start right away, and the other one being Berrien Brown, and it looks like you got your starting tight end in Bauer Sharp,
I still think they need another tight end.
Yeah, you can't just go in there with two, because I don't count Trey Des Green as a tight end anymore.
Well, I think they're going to work to develop him as a tight end, but I think they're going to get another tight end.
Defensive tackle, I still would feel better if they got something there. Well, now obviously this kid from Texas could fit that role.
Right, and they're still shopping other defensive tackles right now, yeah, as well as defensive ends. Mm-hmm. It appears to me that, you know, that defense is going to be loaded next year. Now, do these guys hit? They look like hits right now. They look like major hits. But we're going to see in the spring and in the fall if they're really hits. That's the danger of the transfer portal.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You're right. Interesting times. Interesting times, but it just every time you look, LSU's getting a commitment from this guy, LSU's signing that guy. So, pretty exciting stuff in this wild world of free agency in college football, and LSU is big players in it. Todd, we'll have another show on Christmas Eve, so I won't.
I'm going shopping, and every dollar I spend, up to $2 million, is going to be matched, right?
Yeah.
Hey, what happened to that Glenn guy?
I don't know. He's got work to do. He's on assignment. All of a sudden, he's going to go on assignment.
It was quiet in here.
For Jackson Blackman, Glenn Gilbo, who disappeared on us, Todd Horn, I'm Jeff Buermo. We'll see you on Christmas Eve for the latest in LSU sports. Check out TigerRag.com.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine. Or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.